Welcome to the CodeCast Podcast. Real-world insights for your daily medical coding and billing processes. And now, here's your host, Terry Fletcher.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CodeCast Podcast today. My name is Terry Fletcher. Welcome to March. It's actually March 2nd. I can't believe it. And hopefully this means warmer weather, positive vibes moving forward into spring. And we are at our 176th episode of the CodeCast podcast. So it has been quite the couple of years that we've been doing this. So let's get started. My name is Terry Fletcher, in case you didn't know. And I appreciate all the new listeners. I've been getting a lot of positive feedback from everybody saying, I just found your CodeCast and I'm excited to listen to it. And also for those new listeners, I think Apple Podcasts only keeps 50 at a time. I know we didn't get on YouTube until about a year into it because they had some weird rules as far as podcasts goes back then. But if you go to my website at terryfletcher.net, every single episode from the last 3 years is on there. And we started the CodeCast in November 2017, believe it or not, when podcasts were just starting to really, you know, just be about sports and things like and conversations. And I think it's now grown, I think they said 800%. So we got in kind of on the ground floor, and I do 4 podcasts. So it's kind of interesting to me just to see how they've really grown. And just in mentioning that, so I do the CodeCast podcast. I also do the NSCHBC Edge podcast. And so that is for the management and consulting company that I, association, I should say, that I am a member of and active member. And then I also podcast, not recently, but during the regular season for the Steel City Underground, which is all about football. And then I did have my business collective. I haven't podcasted this year on that yet, only because I think I started it when it was probably not a good time. It's about going from employee to entrepreneur, and it was right when the pandemic hit, and I was like, oh boy. So we did have some build in there, and we are going to probably rebrand it and rename it and come back, but we want to see kind of the country open up a little bit before we go back and relaunch that. So just want to let you know, we have a lot of things in the fire, in the skillet going on, and hopefully you're participating in that. So I think I'm getting enough feedback knowing that I'm getting a lot of new people, a lot of you that have been with me just from the beginning or in the last year or two, and I really appreciate all the effort and all the support. Okay, so let's see what we're going to talk about today. So the nurse visit, 99211, sometimes it's appropriate to code it, sometimes it isn't, but I've been auditing for some commercial plans lately, a little bit for Medicare on this code, a lot for Medicare on the telehealth, but just looking at what is compliant and what's been reported, and I'd have to say most of it has been non-compliant, and we want you to capture services correctly. So if you can actually capture the nurse visit, I want to let you know when you can. So that's going to be a hot topic. Also, there's a new code that I think some of you may have missed. It's a temporary code for Medicare, and we want to make sure that you have that information. And it's really about using a G code to capture some of the audio only when it is not a physician or it is somebody who can't report directly. So there's a couple of things on that I want to talk to you about, which actually has been a really good thing, because we haven't been really able to capture anything for some of our ancillary staff. So when I see some of these codes pop up, I'm like, hey, we want to use that. So we'll be taking a look at that. And actually, let me dive right in and start there. So a HCPCS code that came up, and this was effective January 1st, 2021, and it's the virtual check-in, but all virtual check-ins say that they're by a qualified healthcare professional who can report evaluation and management services directly to the payer. Well, this is a temporary code, and it's only during the public health emergency. So it says brief communication technology-based service. It's G2251. Says virtual check-in by a qualified healthcare professional who cannot report evaluation and management services provided to an established patient not originating from a related service within the previous 7 days, nor leading to a service or procedure within the next 24 hours or soonest available appointment. And then that's 5 to 10 minutes of clinical discussion. Again, this is temporary. This would be what would be a qualified healthcare professional who cannot report. That would be an RN. That would be maybe a dietitian, and they can only do it code on certain services directly, so they have to be under a physician. So, and it has to be medically necessary. So those kinds of people that are professionals that wouldn't generate a claim form on their own, they have to be under a physician. So what is 5 to 10 minutes of clinical discussion? You know, and again, if the patient has already been seen 7 days ago, or if you're scheduling them to come in soonest available, then you can't bill for this. So this is somebody who calls up and they have a problem that can be handled by basically your RN. And so this would not be used if it is a nurse practitioner or PA, because they can bill directly to a payer. So that's when you get into the other virtual check-in codes. And I've commented on that several times, and I also have it on my website in an article. So just know that you want to look up that code, make sure you're reading it, make sure you're understanding what you can bill and can't bill. The only thing on this one is it does say that it's under carrier judgment, so it's not an automatic that it'll get paid. And it's also, again, one of those codes that's going to probably roll back once the public health emergency has ended. So this is different than the G2012 or G2252, which are the virtual check-ins for physicians and other qualified healthcare professionals who can bill directly to the payer. So definitely know your difference on this. Otherwise, you would be reporting services that are incorrect. So we want to make sure we're always correct there. Okay, so what is another thing that came up? And these are some policies that came up with CMS. And one I found, because I always try to search out things when I get questions, either from my CodeCast or from questions from my client base. And it's so funny. I was just going to edit and stop real quick until people pass by my window. But since we're having a conversation, why is it that nobody makes noise? It's really quiet in my space, my office space, until I need to record. And then all of a sudden people decide, let's walk by Terry's window and just be really loud and scream across the parking lot. All I'm saying is, I'm sure you guys can relate. Those of you that are still working virtually and have kids and all that kind of stuff around, you're probably like, yep, as soon as I get on a call, this is what happens. Okay, so some of the policies that have come out for Medicare. This is something that is one of our actual questions. This is the CodeCast question today. Terry, I want to be able to use my telehealth services for risk adjustment. So can I do that? Well, CMS issued a statement on this in April of 2020 and updated it on August 3rd of 2020. And so make sure you basically look at cms.gov/files/document/RA-telehealth-FAQ, and you'll find it. So you want to look at RA telehealth FAQ if you're Googling it. But the question says, in light of COVID-19 pandemic, can CMS clarify which telehealth services are valid for data submissions for HHS operated risk adjustment program? Well, the response was interesting, and this is what I knew coming into it only because they had it on their office hours calls, but I'm glad they put it in a document. So any service provided through telehealth that is reimbursable under applicable state law and otherwise meets applicable risk adjustment data submission standards may be submitted, and it goes on to either EDGE, that's the gathering of external data, the Department of HHS for the operated risk adjustment program. Now, here's what it says. Here's the clarification. If a code submitted to the issuer's EDGE server is descriptive of a face-to-face service furnished by a qualified healthcare professional, so that'd be a physician, MD, or DO, and is an acceptable source of new diagnoses, it will be included in the risk adjustment filtering. Telehealth visits are considered equivalent to face-to-face interactions, but are still subject to the same requirements regarding provider type and diagnostic value. Audio-only services are not counted towards risk adjustment. And that's really important. So they talk about what codes that can be included as well. It says some codes for services that are eligible for inclusion in risk adjustment explicitly mention telehealth, such as emergency department or initial inpatient telehealth consult codes. Now remember, under telehealth, if your physician sees an ER patient or sees an initial inpatient, They can't bill the regular Category 1 codes if it's initial. They've never seen them before. They have to use the G codes, G0425 to G0427. Same thing if they're consulting patients in hospitals or skilled nursing facilities, G0406 to G0509. So, and then you'd need the appropriate modifier. And those do come with the O2 place of service because they're hospital. It's a little different. But just remember, once you've seen somebody, so let's say it's your patient, you know them, and they're going to be admitted to the hospital. Then you can bill the 99221 to 223. But if you've never seen them, the doctor's never had a, you know, any kind of encounter with this patient, any kind of face-to-face, you have to go with the G codes. Because the whole point of telehealth from its original state was basically you're basically adding value to a patient that is known to you. But during the public health emergency, they created these codes saying, well, if you don't know them and you've never seen them and they're sick enough to be in the hospital, well, then you're going to get the G code equivalent. You're not going to get the primary code, which makes perfect sense if you think about it. Sometimes you have to look at the common sense area of that there. So anyway, just wanted to clarify that because that was a question that had come up. And so if you need to find that document, it's actually from the Department of Health and Human Services. And again, make sure that you're Googling it out, that you're looking for CMS RA Telehealth FAQ, because that's a really big deal. And you want to make sure that you're coding that correctly. So another thing that came out recently, and this is before I get into the blood pressure check and all the 99211 stuff, is that there's a secondary payer, Medicare. So for those of you that use Medicare as a secondary payer, then that's going to be important to know, you know, can you code for certain things or can you report something? Well, this came out February 23rd, 2021, so just a little over a week ago. And I thought this was interesting. So this is a MedLearn Matters article, SE 21002. So again, MedLearn Matters, SE 21002, and it just became effective a couple weeks ago. So what's been happening is that apparently there's been some submitted claims for patients who also were on, who have Medicare as a secondary payer, but also maybe had a open or closed liability or no fault car accident or workers' compensation claim, and then also had a Medicare secondary claim. Talk about a problem. So here's what they say that you need to do to be able to continue to see or provide services to the patient or beneficiary. So it says, if services relate to an open MSP accident or injury incident claim, first bill the other insurance as primary. So you're going to bill the other insurer as primary. And then they said, make sure that sometimes we know that there are situations where claims aren't related to the open accident or injury on record. For example, the diagnosis code on the current claim are the same or within the same family as the diagnosis codes on the accident or injury record, but the service is not related. Medicare may inappropriately deny your claim because the diagnosis on the claim and the MSP record are the same. So this is where they're saying, okay, you need to basically adjust your claim because the Medicare secondary payer, that's the MSP, is not going to pick it up because they're looking at it as injury too. So what they're saying here is that if you see a beneficiary for multiple services, bill each service to the proper primary payer. And then when you have a situation where there's an accident or injury identified on the same record, they said, check your claim to make sure you submitted, first of all, correctly to the primary payer. You need to contact your MAC. File an appeal and a phone call to the MAC, as they say, is the most efficient method for resolving an inappropriately denied claim. And then make sure the information you give to your contracted Medicare contract carrier is tell your MAC that the service performed isn't related to the accident or injury on the record. You have to give them the reason why it isn't why it's unrelated to the accident or injury, and request that Medicare adjust and pay the claim if it's a Medicare covered and payer service. It says don't instruct the Medicare beneficiaries to contact the benefits coordination or recovery area. Otherwise, it'll delete the record. They said make sure that you don't bill the Medicare beneficiary for the inappropriate denied claim either, because or refer the claim to a collection agency. It's up to you to resolve the claims issue with your MAC. And if you have this happening, I would actually also send a copy of this article explaining why your claim is different than what the injury submitted to the primary was for. They also said for multiple services, bill each responsible payer separately. So if you give treatment to a beneficiary for accident-related services and non-accident-related services, it says don't submit both sets on the same claim form. Send separate claims to Medicare. One claim for services related to the accident and another claim for services not related to the accident. Otherwise, it says it will promote incorrect denials. Okay, so make sure you check this out. I thought it was a good article just to explain about the Medicare secondary payer, because that could definitely be an issue moving forward as you're trying to submit your claims. So we just want to make sure that you're kind of, you know, understanding some of that information. Our coding question is brought to you today by the NSCHBC, the National Society of Certified Healthcare Business Consultants. Make sure that you check out the nschbc.org, and hopefully you'll want to get some of their information, join, check out the podcast that I host for them. And it's a really great organization. I love being a part of it. Probably one of my most expensive associations to belong to. I would say it is the most expensive. But, you know, the team on there, they have CPAs and healthcare attorneys and you name it. So it's really helpful to have that as a backup. So a specialty question, the 99211. So when can you bill for this? Well, a blood pressure check. Let me explain kind of the medically necessary times you can bill for it. So let's say that you have a BP check and this patient doesn't have any evidence in their medical record that they have high blood pressure. Well, then that would be a problem. So the 99211 is for ancillary staff that's billed either under the physician, so incident two. Well, that's the only way it can be billed. Or it's basically submitted. And again, it has to be under a physician, but it's your medical assistant. It's somebody that can't bill directly, but is a qualified professional under their certification. And so if the patient, let's say, has hypertension and the doctor says, you know, we're going to try, the doctor saw them today, let's say, and says, we're going to try to modify your medication because I'm noticing it's a little high. Come back in a week, get your blood pressure checked with my medical assistant. And if there's any problem, we'll let you know. That would be okay to bill a 99211. Let's say the patient is on Coumadin or on some kind of a blood thinner, and they're coming in for their prothamin time, just to see what their INR is, their levels are. Well, that's not a nurse visit anymore. Remember, 3 years ago, the CPT came up with a new code, 93793, that was the anticoag check. So you don't want to code a nurse visit at all. That would not be appropriate. If the patient's coming in, let's say they're confused on some of their supplements or their medicines, and you have an RN on staff, then that would be appropriate. They could talk to the RN on their medicines as long as it's well documented. The CMS issued a statement during the public health emergency that COVID counseling during a test, so patients coming to one of your drive-throughs, the doctor is doing the actual testing, or a pharmacist under the physician is doing the actual testing, and they talk to them about social distancing and wearing a mask and quarantining from their family if they suspect that they are exposed. That's a 99211 as well. Now, this is an in-person minimal visit. And also remember, pharmacists cannot bill any E&M on their own, only the 99211 under the physician supervision, because they are paid by they're paid by the physician as contracted employee. Pharmacists are only covered under Part D. They're not covered under Part B. So they can submit that claim, but again, they would have to be under a physician to do that. What you cannot code a 99211 for, I mentioned the ProTime, but you cannot code to fill out paperwork for a patient. You cannot code it for a phone call for a patient. This is a face-to-face minimal visit. There's no time threshold in 2021. So that's because sometimes things take longer than 5 to 10 minutes. But just make sure patients coming in and say, can you fill out this disability form? That's free. Unless you have an administrative fee, you want to charge them, yes, we'll do it for $10 or whatever. But make sure you're not trying to bill for any kind of administrative work. You know, patient has a back to school note or a back to work note. That's part of doing business. You just need to do that. Now, if you decide you want to charge that extra, I wouldn't, but that's just administrative. There's no code for doing that. Now, let's say you have a patient who's kind of over the top when it comes to all of their different forms they want you to fill out. Let's say they've been out of work for a year and they're like, can you fill out this form for disability in this form for, you know, my credit card, and on and on. And at that point, yeah, maybe multiple forms you want to, you know, charge an administrative fee. But again, you cannot charge the 99211 for that. That would be inappropriate to do that. So really be careful, okay, with that, because that's that's non-compliant, and I don't want you to get in trouble for that. Okay, well, let's see. We are end with my personal tidbit this week. My CodeCast hit 200,000 downloads the other day. I was so excited. So we're actually at 200,220. And so I can't even tell you how happy that makes me and excited and wants me to keep doing this as long as you want me to do it. We have had the best reviews on Apple lately. And I really appreciate all of you having my back, because I know that I had a couple of questionable reviews because some people don't like my politics or don't like my comments on that. But that's, you know, that's up to you. That's your call. Just, you know, it's up to you. But I really hope you wouldn't take it out on me personally, because I do a lot of work to keep these CodeCasts going. So I just wanted to shout out to some of the great, really nice reviews I've had lately. Kat, Kelly Z, Amber, Maria C, John, Tori, Manesh. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you, the support, and all of you that have left me ratings and reviews. And please continue to do so. I can't tell you how much it really helps to keep us on all the platforms. And we are now on 15 platforms. Thank you, Joe Kuzma. He is my awesome podcast producer. So I really appreciate that. Okay, that's it for me this week. So make it a great day, make it a great week, and I'll talk to you next week on the CodeCast podcast.
For more information on medical coding, billing, auditing, and compliance, including how to hire Terry, follow Terry on Twitter at TerryCoder1 or visit her website at www.terryfletcher.net. Podcast producer Joe Kuzma. Music producer Dasassin Music.